This podcast is not safe for work and will feature movie spoilers. It will feature scenes described of a graphic nature. It will contain language which most listeners may find offensive. Welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. Hi everyone and welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. This is episode 172. This is a kickoff of our 10 Tales of Woe series. I'm your host Duncan McLeish, welcome to the show. The 10 Tales of Woe series will examine 10 infinitely sad movies over the course of this month. That's right, just as you're starting to get a spring in your step and spring is in the air, the podcast Under the Stairs is here to depress you. I mean, there's no better way around it. There's no better way to say it. That is literally what I'm here to do. I have assembled 10 movies, which, I mean, 10 really good movies, but at their core, when you break down maybe even the slightly happy endings, question mark, what you have here is an infinitely sad story about something which, as an audience, we have to accept when we watch the movie. The series burst at an idea of, hey, why have I never spoken about this movie on the show? Hey, have I never spoken about this movie on the show? Hey, have I never spoken about this movie on the show? That's right, the stories kind of bum me out a little bit. You know what would be great? Just lumping them all in together and then just running the train on them. And then I never have to worry about being bummed out talking about a movie again. So I'm taking a hit for you guys, ladies and gents. I'm jumping on top of the grenade with the pin that has already been pulled to take this one straight in the chest for you guys. We're going to look at these movies. Not only are we going to look at the movies, but slightly different to some of the other reviews that we do here, we're going to focus primarily on what it is about the stories that make them sad. I don't know why I'm laughing. It's probably a nervous laugh because we're going to get deep. So yeah, you have 10 of these reviews peppered throughout this month. There will be an average 2 a week, but obviously if you do the math, you'll know there's at least 2 weeks that will have 3. So they're coming in quick succession. This very first one, looking at Pascal Laugier's The Tall Man, will be followed up on Saturday, Friday, Saturday, with the German horror movie Goodnight Mummy, which came out in 2014. So you're getting 2 this week. Next week, you'll be getting 3. So yeah, it's going to be a ton of fun. I really don't want to do this. I don't know why I set myself these things to do. And then I'm like, I don't want to talk about depressing things. I want to talk about happy things. Not depressing things. Yeah, depressing things is what we're going to be discussing on this show. Now, this is April. I did warn you in advance you're getting a ton of content this month. And where I would usually, at the start of these episodes, rattle out what is upcoming for the rest of the week. To be fair, I mean, a lot of it is moving pieces and it's like a jigsaw puzzle being tried to be, you know, placed together and to form a picture at the hands of a blind man with no braille. So I don't know where all the pieces are quite fitting in yet. I just know there's about 24 episodes coming this month. So rather than commit to definitive, yes, it will happen here, just be safe in the knowledge that I will not put out 2 episodes in the same day. And you will get them in regular occasions. Your Thursday bonus episodes will happen as expected. Your Sunday 88 films will happen as expected. And there will always be a Monday episode for you all out there. Anything else goes in between that. Anything else goes. I have some pretty cool ideas up my sleeve for this month. Including this series. Which, like I say, is going to be deeply depressing. But we have to do it. We can get through this together. Now, the 10 Tales of Woe are 10 movie titles that I picked. And very much like a March Madness episode, I am not the end point. I'm not the flagpole in the sand. I am not the alpha and omega to creating lists. I'm just not. We all have our own personal tastes. And I wanted to make it 10 Tales of Woe and not 20 Tales of Woe. There are plenty of other sad horror movies out there that we can get into and examine at later dates for sure. But what has been really fun about the March Madness episode is I did some serial killers, following them up on the, you know, up on the episode, and said, interact with me on the Facebook group page to let me know your favourite psychopaths, maybe some that I missed out. And yeah, you guys delivered in spades on that one. We got tons of them started appearing on that page. So use this episode as a similar exercise to get the creative depressed juices flowing. We all have different things that make us sad as well. I tend to find, being a father now, that things that involve any sort of pain and trauma to a child really affect me. Prior to that, I would not care if you shot a kid in the head on screen. It was kind of funny. Nowadays, maybe less funny. So there are things that make me sad that will make other people less sad. And there are things out there that will make other people infinitely sad that just don't really bother me at all. So rather than just have me being the end, kind of the end point to these discussions here, let's continue on over on the Facebook group page. It's facebook.com/groups/tpodcast. Right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a very short break just now. You're going to hear promos for shows that I love. You're going to hear the trailer for this episode. This is the first of our 10 Tales of Woe. This is looking at Pascal Lozier's little movie starring Jessica Biel called The Tall Man. Going to be discussing that movie and so much sad content right after this.
This is a test of the emergency podcasting system. Listen to the Psychosemantic Podcast. Politics, movies, and political movies. Find us on Facebook, iTunes, Stitcher, LegionPodcasts.com. The Psychosemantic Podcast.
Our town has been dead for 6 years. At first, we blamed the closing of the mine. But something bad had come to destroying our town even more.
So you believe it too?
Something had come to Cold Rock that was taking the children.
The last kid disappeared 2 months ago. Won't be long before the next one goes.
Dinner half an hour, okay?
Do you still have to go to work tomorrow?
Yeah.
Can we play together again when you get home?
I promise.
David! Over this line. No one goes into that.
And he was gone when the children were paying the price.
The children.
It was like an ancient legend. Something from a book of fairy tales or an old song. But that feeling didn't last long.
Where are they?
We haven't found them. Not him, not the others.
And welcome back. So you've just heard the trailer for The Tall Man from 2012, directed and written by Pascal Lozier. This guy who you may know, you may not know actually. I keep thinking that everyone just knows who this guy is. He hasn't really done many movies at all, but his debut film was the one that kind of garnered a bit of fevered attention, and rightly so. The guy's first movie, first proper movie, was a little movie called Martyrs. Now Martyrs is a movie that I have a story past with. The first time I watched it, I was not sold on it, if I'm honest. I thought it was okay. I thought it was fine. I didn't think it was amazing like everyone told me it was. In fact, I think myself, I was expecting something so much more than what it actually gave me. And then it actually did give me what I wanted in subsequent viewings, which was this emotionally crushing movie about the lengths that people will go to prove a point, the lengths that people will go to explore existential questions of being, religion, the lengths that people will go to survive. I had all of that in there. It was a fucking fascinating film that I've only revisited a few times, mostly because it's not an easy watch. I know some people are like, well, I watch Martyrs, so I'm fucking hard as fuck. Yes, right, let me round of applaud you for doing that, but you're missing the point of that movie if that's what you think. Me and Baz, when Baz was still on the show many moons ago, did Martyrs, and what was really interesting about that one is how well he picked up on what the movie was trying to put out there, but how very different our interpretations of the end of the movie were. I think that comes down to, on some level, a kind of theological perspective and a belief system. I believe in nothing, really. So my view of things was slightly gnarlier and slightly more nihilistic than Bazzy's, who went into it with a slightly optimistical point of view towards the end. And yeah, this guy was riding high, and for whatever reason, The Tall Man, his follow-up movie, just didn't set the world on fire. Not only did it not set the world on fire, it got released to little to no fanfare. Martyrs is such a weird little movie anyway that it didn't exactly have this huge following of people. It's got a gnarly cult following for sure, but didn't have this real following, so to speak, of people to be excited that this guy was making an English language movie and we should all be excited about it and let's all sit back and, you know, and marvel at The Tall Man. That never happened. So the movie came out and did alright and then kind of vanished. And as a result of that, people have not really seen this movie. It's woefully underseen. And I can hear the arguments from those that have seen it kind of building up right now. That argument might be, well, it's not like Martyrs and it's not as good as Martyrs. And I'm here to say that you are right. It isn't like Martyrs. It's in some respects. But certainly it isn't nearly as gnarly and it isn't as good. So there's a pessimistic intro if ever there was one. But what The Tall Man has, I think, at its core, is a weird kind of balance, which Lozier's kind of went on to do with Incident in the Ghostland from last year, but this idea of blending reality, fantasy, and dark fairy tale into it, kind of grimed in it in realism. He doesn't do like the Guillermo del Toro version of it. He does it in a more kind of gnarly, grounded way, and as a result of that, sometimes the truths he speak hit a bit too close to home for some audiences. Some people like fantasy to be that fantasy and be embellished to a point that we can't recognise it. But the bottom line is, this movie starts with a declaration saying that, you know, thousands of kids go missing each year. And that's true. Thousands of kids do go missing each year, and very few of them are ever found. You know, when they go, they go. And as a result of that, when you kind of sit down and take it in, it's a movie which at no point at all ever seems to, it never seems to cheer up that sentiment. If anything, it doubles down on it. I mean, there's, like the previous one, there are, well, like the previous movie, Martyrs, there's two ways to come down on this movie. There's two ways to appreciate the message in which this movie is putting out. One is that at the end of the day, the kids are in a better place, and as a result of that, with those kids being in a better place, they are afforded a better life. And isn't that what we want for our kids? Is the best possible life that they can have? On the twist side of that, though, this movie also puts forward the opinions that the parents whose kids have went missing have the worst closure imaginable, that not only were they maybe not the greatest parent on the planet, but they couldn't protect their child when they needed it, and not only were their child kidnapped by someone who they knew, but they're led to believe in this scenario that their kids have died at the hands of this very malicious serial killer, which in itself is a fucking horrible thing to think of, and they have to live the rest of their lives with that. So the movie plays with two kind of possible outcomes, which are both essentially the same outcome, but it depends on how you view the outcome as to whether or not you think this is a good ending or a bad ending. If this is a happy story or if this is a sad story. I think even if you think, well, the kids are in a better place, I think you have to then raise questions of who makes that judgment. Who makes that call that that person's an unfit parent? Who makes that call that that kid growing up in that environment will turn out bad? Because truth be told, if you look at, you look back at history, a lot of very influential, creative, and what would become entrepreneurial people came from nothing, came from abuse. So there's that aspect as well. I mean, it's a movie which at its fundamental core is a kind of play on the Pied Piper of Hamlet. This idea of these kids being lured to a better place, away from their, you know, their families that can't give them the lives that they want. And I mean, the movie doesn't exactly lean too far from that sentiment, and times it really, really doubles down. And that's just my opening sentence on this. That's just where we are kicking off. The movie itself stars Jessica Biel, Jodie Ferland, Steve McHattie, William B. Davis, Samantha Ferris, Colin Bueller, Eve Harrell, Janet Wright, Fern Downey, John Mann, Teach Grant, Garwin Sanford, Jacob Davis. There are some other people in here. The synopsis, and we're going to get into it right from the off, is when her child goes missing, a mother looks to unravel the legend of the Tall Man, an entity who allegedly abducts children. Now, it's safe to say this thing about Pascal Laugier. He has a clear idea of what he likes to do in movies, and that is he likes to set up a narrative which somewhere in the middle part will change, and then you will get a further twist at the end. So he's kind of like a headier M. Night Shyamalan, in that instead of giving you the big kind of dramatic, yes, it was the plants that were killing all life on the planet, instead of giving you that sort of twist, he lets you get comfortable with the idea that you know where this movie's going. And then he tilts it. And that's all he does. He tilts it. What if the person you thought was a good person is actually a bad person? And that's the twist. And then you're like, oh, right. So then you start to reevaluate. This is a dark, saucy little number, isn't it? And then at the end, he kind of twists. So if you imagine this being a set of scales. And when you're watching The Tall Man, Jessica Biel is higher up on the scale. So there's a weight on the rest of the town, and it's kind of weighing them down. So she is up high. She is our hero. And then in the middle of the movie, we lift the weights off and put them on the Jessica Biel side. So the town go up to the top and Jessica Biel goes down to the bottom and she's the bad one. And then what the movie does at the end is it takes half of the weights off Jessica Biel and puts them on the other side, bringing it back up to balance and ultimately forcing you to make the decision on whether or not she is a good person, question mark. She is a bad person, question mark. Is the town an evil place, question mark? Or is it actually just like everywhere else, question mark? Not an easy thing to pull off. It gets a lot of criticism for it. It gets a lot of criticism from people saying that he just remakes the same movie over and over again, just changes the subject matter. Truth be told, if you watch Incident in a Ghostland, it does exactly the same. You have a very strong feeling of where that movie's going to start. You have a very strong feeling about who your heroes are and who the villains are. And then we get a twist and then we're like, well, I don't know what's happening now. Are we in this time frame? Are we not in this time frame? Did these things happen? Did they not? And then you get to the end and it twists again and you're like, wait one second. And if you're me, you come away with a very strong feeling of what that ending actually is. And it almost moots a lot of the points you've seen in the movie. Almost makes them null. And some people don't like that. Some people don't like being led on a journey that doesn't go somewhere. Or a journey that makes them have to question something at the end. And I think that's fair. Movies can be as linear, narratively straight as they want to be. But at times it's good to throw a curveball in there. And times it's good to be lost in a labyrinthian tale, which, you know, keeps kind of moving you on, keeps giving you little tidbits to bite into, but never fully resolves the situation. And whilst the resolution in The Tall Man is a definite resolution in terms of, to the audience, to the characters involved, it's not at all. And I think that's really interesting about it. So the story in itself, whilst we're getting into tons of analysis, I told you we would not be doing this as we usually would do a review on Podcasts Under the Stairs. So the story is that we have this town called Cold Rock. It used to be a very prosperous mining community. Times have changed. Like a lot of industry in America, it has started to go away. And no, not Donald Trump will be able to save the coal mines. That's a dying industry. That's Duncan's two cents. That's not what the movie's saying. I'm just telling you. It's a dying industry. Let it die. Focus on renewables. Come on. It's fucking 2019, people. Anyway, Cold Rock town decimated at the loss of jobs and the loss of industry within this town. However, it's still populated by people who would work in those mines. You know, it still has a, in the past, what you would find, it's the same in the UK as it is in the States, wherever there was an industrial hub of some description, whether it's a coal mine, whether it's factories or whatnot, you find communities build around them because workers live close to their job, they start families, etc, etc. It is the circle of life! It's the circle of life. What it says is what happens when that, you know, heart of the community, the thing that gives lifeblood, stops functioning, stops beating. What happens then? And that's what you get in this movie. It's what you're getting in real world right now, is these towns, these small towns that are decimated when the local car manufacturing plant, you know, like, ultimately closes, or the, you know, the local coal mine closes down, the shipyards close down. What happens? Well, what happens is the people are still there. And they only know how to do one thing, and if that job doesn't exist, trying to get another job is near impossible. Is that the best place to grow up? Well, this movie hypothesises that it isn't. Hypothesises that there are a lot of emotionally crippled families in this town. And they've got young kids, and alcoholism, and drug taking, and all the things that let people cope have started happening. The kids are being neglected. Kids are not being looked after. On the flip side of that, kids are also being abducted quite regularly. Almost every 2 months, the kids are going missing. And it is leaving a huge impact on the community of parents that are just broken. Like these kind of hollowed out husks of humanity that are trying to continue living, but with the uncertainty of where did their kid go? No closure. No closure here at all. Just where did their kids go? How did it end up this way? What has happened? Why me? Why them? And from the outset, the movie's kind of first 35, 40 minutes plays this very straight down the line that, you know what? The town is a bad place. And there's something kind of weird about it. We meet Jessica Biel. She is a local nurse. She was married to the town doctor who left or died. It's never really purposely kind of... It's insinuated that he dies, although the end of this movie, you know, has the Shyamalan reveal, and we'll get to that. But so she's continuing to try and keep things going. She lives isolated from the community. And she lives with what we assume is her daughter and her young son. And we see her deliver this baby to a girl who maybe, once again, it's all weird, it's all warped, it's all fucked up. A mother and daughter come in, and it is insinuated that the daughter's father or stepfather has impregnated her. She gives birth to this baby, and they are very quick to get her the fuck out of the area. Ship her off to Seattle with the baby because, let's be honest, this ain't a place to bring up a kid at the moment. Kids are going missing. The kind of husband, stepfather sort of dude is a piece of shit. Such a fucking horrible, horrible guy. And yeah, that's how we kind of enter this story. We have this kind of FBI agent, and he is coming back every now and again whenever there's a kid being kidnapped. He's on the trail, he's on the case, but he's been coming back several times and they're no further forward. As the movie goes on, Jessica Biel, who has a weirdly, at first we think religious house, but actually I think the details are really clever here in that, you know, only listen to kind of gospel stuff on the radio. There is no television. The young kid is told no TV by presumably his older sister. And they live this very kind of segregated kind of life. And in the middle of the night, one night, the tall man comes. Now I know what you're thinking. Who the fuck is the tall man? The tall man is what the town has called the kidnapper. Almost like Slender Man, he is this kind of weird mythical man, all dressed in black, who shows up and kidnaps kids and takes them away into the woods and they disappear. The tall man comes for Jessica Biel's son, takes him away. There is this protracted chase scene, which has shades of Incident with a Ghostland. Definitely copy this for sure. But there's elements here, a little bit of high tension. And eventually, Jessica Biel, bloodied, bruised, battered, all of the above, is kind of flung free of the truck she's chasing down that has the kid, and picked up by the FBI guy, who takes her back to the diner. And when she's in the diner, the town are surprisingly all over her. And the waitress tells her to go into the back and get changed. And while she's in the back getting changed, the town's persona, the town's attitude changes pretty quickly. And then we kind of, as the audience, start to get the vibe that maybe the town is in on it. They don't like Jessica Biel. They don't want her doing anything else. In fact, they're talking about killing her. They're talking about getting their hands on her and killing her because she knows too much. So this is the big kind of doubling down on the town being the bad character in this one. She manages to escape. She manages to track down the tall man and actually find out is this inhabitant of the town, this mother who lost their child. But she's fucking crazy. She's talking about how she managed to track down the tall man, and it's Jessica Biel. Because the kid that is living with Biel, this child, the reason he doesn't get to watch TV or anything else is because he'd get to see what's happening in the real world, and it turns out Jessica Biel kidnapped him. And there's your twist. The weights are now moved from one side of the scale to the other side. We're now lopsided. Jessica Biel's the bad guy? So, she manages to get the boy and escape and go back to the house, and we find out that her daughter is actually not her daughter, and subsequently she's in on it as well. They have been kidnapping kids from the town. By the time the police and the townspeople arrive, the girl has committed suicide, and Jessica Biel is in the house, but the boy is nowhere to be seen. He is gone. She took him into the basement. We never see him. And she's arrested for these crimes. When the police investigate the basement, they realise it actually connects to a kind of warren of these kind of mineshaft holes that go everywhere underneath the town. We then have sequences where we are trying to break down why she did it. Why did she do this horrible thing? And we get some pretty powerful dialogue, which I think is pretty much Pascal kind of doubling down on what he, well, his central message is in this movie. In fact, Biel's character, when confronted with the woman who dressed up as the tall man to kidnap back her child, has this great kind of monologue section where she talks about how This is not solely in Cold Rock. It's the same everywhere. The defeat and the pain. It's a cycle. The system is broken. It doesn't work. And there's nowhere to turn. There's no support. And I've seen it all over the world. It's just easier to give up. And I'm not any better than you. I've just seen more. And it's not a matter of being a good person or being a bad person, but it's how you cope. We are so limited. But the eyes of every child are filled with potential and hope, and we should embrace and nourish that potential, but we don't have to continue to make the same mistakes. We continue to let them grow up broken and lost, just like their parents. We have to break the cycle. It has to be a priority, but it's not. That's what I've been trying to do. That's what I've done everywhere. And what did I change? Nothing. When she's finally captured, when she's finally given this out, we get this kind of this story. But what she's saying doesn't equate to what we're seeing. Because what she's saying is, you know, I've tried to help these kids. And we think, well, no, you took them to your house. And there was only one kid there. So you took them to your house and you forced them to play and be happy and all the rest away from their mum. But how does that work long term? And when she's finally kind of... when she's finally confronted with it, I mean, it's an infinitely sad scene, actually. You know, with this mother, this Mrs. Johnson character saying that it's unbearable, missing him. She says, I know I live in a dump, I don't have a job, and life for me is hard, but I would still die for him. And it's that kind of, it's the other side of the coin. You know, just, you don't need money, an opportunity to be a good parent. You just need to be able to love your child. And this movie is kind of putting two levels down here and saying, that's fine by saying that, but if I could take your kid and put him somewhere else with money and education and all this, don't you think he'd be better? Don't you think he'd be happier? Don't you think that's what he wants? Do you think that's what you should want? It puts you in that weird situation. As a parent, I'd like to think that even if I couldn't afford something for myself, I'd scrape the money to make sure my child had it. Would I want someone to send my child away somewhere else if they had a better life? If they could have everything they ever wanted? I don't know what I would make the call on that one. I don't know how selfish I would be. And is it being selfish by wanting to keep your kids close to you even if you can't afford to give them the life that they deserve? I don't know. It's an interesting question though, isn't it? And it's a question that Pascal puts forward in this movie. There's a great interview with him where he said that the movie itself is a sad reflection on the social class system. He says that he was trying to depict hard human relationships and the way our society is created, organised, and the whole societal class system has not changed a single bit since the 19th century. So the poor are still poor and the wealthy are still wealthy, if not even more wealthy. And that's where we are. And it's not changed. And it hasn't changed at all. And this is his message in the movie. He's taken an interesting stab at it. He's come at it from a weird angle. Jessica Biel's character says ultimately that she's killed all the kids. She says that because she can see how much suffering's on this mother's face. And she just wants her to accept what has happened and move on. But that's not the truth. In the final sequence, what we find is her husband is very much still alive. During this movie, the other sister, there was one sister that was pregnant, there's another sister who doesn't speak, who's fascinated by the tall man, and actually asks, when she's worked it out, she asks Jessica Biel if she can be taken to him, and Biel says, listen, if I do this, you can't stop this, he will come for you, and she says, well, that's what I want. And then we find out what that equates to. We go on the journey that all the other kids have went on. She's kidnapped by the tall man. It's revealed to be Jessica Biel's husband, the doctor. She's taken to this halfway house. And she's adopted by a kind of affluent, wealthy woman who gives her the life that she wanted to give kids that she didn't have, maybe, question mark. And we see at the end this life of, you know, living in this very, very fancy house, having, you know, servants to look after her, the best education, gets to study art and the things that interest her. But she says the same things on the way out, that for all this is a better life in a lot of respects, it doesn't negate the fact that she wants to go home. She wants to be with her mum. She's too old, actually, if anything. She's older than a lot of people would expect to go through this sort of system. And as a result, she pines for home. She pines for her home. So it's an infinitely sad movie. Because whilst at the end we should be like, oh, yay, well, this girl who's now talking has this great life now. We switch back to the point that now that Jessica Biel is away, she can't be blamed for the murder. The FBI are looking into it, and the mother thinks she's been abducted. And that's where we are. At the end of this movie, the movie forces you to accept that our society is broken. That there are people out there that probably shouldn't have kids. They're not, if they can't look after themselves, they should not be bringing life into this world. People who are just trying to get through, trying to give the best for their kids, but can't afford it, but that doesn't diminish their love, doesn't diminish the upbringing they could give. And then if you put on top of that, the fact that Pascal is also saying that, you know, if we could give these kids a better life, should we? And should you feel happy about that? And I've read many reviews of this movie that talk about the happy ending. Is it a happy ending? I don't think it is. I don't think it is at all. How is this any different than anything else in society when the rich can handpick and control the destiny of the poor? How is that a happy ending? It's not a happy ending. It's an infinitely sad ending. A movie that works on the structure of the Pied Piper, but instead of doing it through like a kind of a vengeful entity, this one is doing it through the class-based system, through kind of social and economic situations that we all face as human beings. The closing monologue's great. I find it sums up really, really well what the movie is trying to put out, and it's taken from the perspective of the girl who's kidnapped at the very end, who later goes on to be known as Vera. And she says, "My first mother was a good human, hardworking, generous, affectionate. We talked, we shared, we laughed, but then it stopped. She couldn't talk to us anymore about men, about her dreams, about her pain. My first mother loved me and I loved my first mother. My second mother only mothered me for a short time. I often think about her. I try to imagine the moment she had in the tunnel, giving one last kiss to her husband. Did he implore her to run away with him? Or did they both know someone had to stay, be the monster, pay the price, and protect their secret? Whether she was a good person or not, I'm still not sure. But my second mother loved me and I loved my second mother. My third mother is teaching me about the bigger world. She says knowledge is the key to open all my doors. So I stay focused. I observe and I work hard. I listen to what she says. I want to please her. My third mother loves me and I love my third mother." It's this indication that love can come from three different angles and not any one is better than the other. And in the morality of the story in itself, that's the sad aspect about it, is no one should have the right to dictate, demand, or control anyone else. But through certain prisms, watching this movie, you may think the right thing has been done. You may think bad things have happened to bad people. You may believe a certain narrative. It's a sad, sad story, though. And as the camera pulls out, we're left just thinking that this is the way our world is now. Hey, happy days. This is the world that we bring our kids into, and this is the world we live in. And it's not getting any better. It's only getting worse. Did I change these all up? I feel depressed AF. How about that for hump day? Happy hump day, people. Go and wallow in self-despair. I think The Tall Man's a great movie. I don't think it's Martyrs by any stretch of the imagination. I think he's a really interesting director as well. I really liked Incident in a Ghostland. I think he likes to play with narratives, and I think that's what makes him hugely interesting. I think if I was grading this movie, it's a 4. I give this one a strong 4 out of 5. It got slated upon its release. A lot of people saying, 1, it's not scary, 2, it doesn't make sense, 3, Jessica Biel is cold in it, don't like this movie, and you're entitled to that opinion. Is it Martyrs? No. Do I want Martyrs Volume 2? No. That movie's perfect and it deserves to exist in its own little bubble. That's where it deserves to be. But who knows? Who knows? Let's see what you guys think. What do you think of The Tall Man as a movie? Let me know on the Facebook group page, facebook.com/groups/TPotsCast. Right, I'm taking my final break of this show. When I come back, I'm closing out right after this.
You're listening to the podcast Under the Stairs.
And you've been listening to the podcast Under the Stairs. This has been episode 172. This is the first of 10 Tales of Woe, an examination of horror movies that have infinitely sad storylines. This first episode was looking at Pascal Logier's 2012 movie, The Tall Man. Hopefully you've enjoyed that. Hopefully you've watched the movie before you listen to this. I do kick that spoiler warning out there. But yeah, we went in depth, started discussing a bit more. We will be doing our next one in a couple of days' time, and we'll be looking at Goodnight Mummy, which is a German movie, so you have to read. I was elected to lead, not to read. You will have to read subtitles to watch that movie. But it's another one that ends with what you think is a weirdly happy ending, which really isn't. It really isn't when you dig beneath the surface. It's so fucking sad, so tragic. And we're going to be looking at that one as well. There's a multitude of ways to check out podcasts Under the Stairs, as always. As you come across and check us out on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to the feed, that way you get the shows as and when they drop, and access to the back catalogue of Teapot's content. Also, leave us a rating and a review. It's the best way to support us on those platforms. You can also check us out at Stitcher, Smart Radio, SoundCloud, Google Play, and the TuneIn app, as well as Spotify. You can come across our website, it's teapotscast.com. And you can buy merch like posters and enamel pins direct from our merch site. That money comes back and supports what we do Under the Stairs is teapotscast.bigcartel.com. You can go to Facebook. We're in two places over there if you want to interact with other listeners, post polls, trailers, tell us what you're watching and get involved that way. It's the group page, facebook.com/groups/teapotscast. If all you're interested in is when the shows are dropping, to check out a live stream or an occasional Thursday, then all you need to do is go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/TPutsCast. You can interact with myself and the Baz on the twin prongs of social media sexiness, Instagram and Twitter. Both can be followed at TPutsCast. The podcast Under the Stairs will return tomorrow, kicking off Movie Club. That's right, it's Challenge TPuts April 2019. With Movie Club, another Antipodean horror outing coming your way. It'll be announced tomorrow, but until then, wherever you are, whatever the time zone is, and whatever you're up to in this big bad world of ours, please take care of yourselves out there. This is Duncan McLeish broadcasting live from Under the Stairs, and I am signing off. Feel the heart.
Yourself.